This is Home Tech, show number 106, recorded on February 21st, 2013. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, a very snowy Bellevue, Nebraska. We got about 6 inches on the ground and maybe another 4 or 5 still coming yet tonight. So we're hunkered down for the evening. A great night to do some podcasting. So welcome to the show. Of course, we broadcast each week live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here and world-class show notes. And actually, I invited Andrew and I haven't seen him yet. So I wonder what happened to him. Andrew does those show notes for me each week. They're found out at theaverageguy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show. Send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, or find me on Twitter at Jay Collison. You can also follow the show schedule at theaverageguy.tv. You can also join us for a live chat right now during the show. So if you're watching live or if you're on YouTube, head over to theaverageguy.tv/live. Right below the live stream window is chat, or right above the YouTube window is chat. And you can head out there and join us. There's a, I don't know, there's a handful of guys, a couple handfuls, maybe even three, out there in chat right now. And, of course, we do the show every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, out at theaverageguy.tv, and you're welcome to join us each and every week. If you want to join us for the conversation around the show, head out to facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy. I'd love to have you join out there. It's been a very vibrant and active group lately, and we talk about just about everything and everything. Although Windows kind of dominates, Windows and Windows Phone kind of dominates the conversation as of late, but we'd love to have you out there at Facebook. All right, we have a packed show for you tonight. I had a idea to kind of actually throw for the next couple shows. I just threw it out to my regular hosts and said, who wants to come in and talk about home networking? And it was a little bit of a contest to see who could come in first. And the three guys I have tonight with me answered the call first. We actually have another show next week, next Thursday, right behind this. Kevin Schoonover, Greg Welch, and Rennie Phipps will join us for that as well. I know I'm missing one, but we're going to cover more home networking next week as well. So, guys, your game, you're on, because the guys next week are going to try and one-up you. So, you know, bring your best tonight. Speaking of bringing your best, he always brings his best and has been talking HP N40Ls over the last couple weeks. John Stutzman joins us. John, how are you?
Fantastic. It's a little snowy here. We're getting freezing rain and snow. We got about 8 inches now on the ground.
Oh, nice.
And it's still coming down. So
yeah. If you're in the Midwest, you're just getting all kinds of snow. So if you're listening to this and it's July, sorry. And then next to him, and a guy who likes to come in and talk all things networking, and of course, Nathaniel Lindley works for the school district there up in Minnesota. You got to have some snow by now, right, Nathaniel? Uh-oh. We might have lost Nathaniel. Can you hear me? All right, he's trying that. Well, we'll get Nathaniel back here in just a second. And then next to him in my window, and a guy who actually was the first one to get all his notes together in the show notes, did a nice job of up in the bar. That is Paul Bruin. Paul, how are you?
I'm great. Good evening, Jim. It's great to be here.
You bet. It's good to have you in, and I think we got some good stuff. It's funny, Nathaniel just ran back. He must have lost Bluetooth connectivity with his headset. So we'll get Nathaniel back here in just a second. All right. Well, Paul, I'm going to put you on the spot first, and I want to dig right into this. I threw the show idea together a couple weeks ago. I've been out the last 2 weeks, and so if you follow the show on a regular basis, you put up with a couple interviews that I did. One with one with Brian Burgess and one with Dave Jackson. Both Brian Burgess, of course, out at groovypost.com, and Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting. Appreciate you listening to those. We're actually making a separate home tech interview show that will get its own RSS feed. If you're interested in that kind of thing, it will be a one-on-one interview show coming up. But so I appreciate you giving me a couple weeks off and letting me do that. But a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I threw this out to the regular hosts and said, I want to talk about home networking, and I want you guys to kind of jump in, and whoever wants to cover this. And we had enough individuals or enough hosts respond to that, that we are going to actually do two shows. So this week and next, pretty in-depth look at what these guys do from a home networking standpoint. And Each one of the guys has done a nice job of documenting this, and this will make its way over to the to the show notes. So don't despair. You also want to watch this if you're listening to the audio of it. You really might want to head over to youtube.com/theaverageguy because there's going to be a lot of video in there that's going to have a lot of diagrams. So, gentlemen, as you talk about your various setups, make sure you keep our audio folks in mind, but you might want to head over there and I'll be showing these kind of these diagrams as they talk about it. So head over there, and if you're listening to the audio, youtube.com/theaverageguy will get you there. Let's jump right into this. You were the first one to answer the call, and I want to talk a little bit about your setup that you have there. So we've got about 15 or 20 minutes to kind of go through what you have. We will be there to ask you questions. But all three of you didn't really come at this from an average guy approach. You probably have the above average guy setups in mind. But Paul, break down your setup a little bit for us. I'm going to flip over on the video so folks can see your notes. Tell us a little bit, start kind of high level, and then work your way down for me.
Okay, well, sure. My recent home network configuration really started, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago, seeking a stable network configuration above all else. I'm a wired gigabit Ethernet kind of guy. I have access to my basement and attic, so I'm able to get my home office on the second floor, jacked into the cable modem in the basement. That part was easy. Getting the router and a cable modem combination that was stable, not so easy. Over the past, almost a decade, here's the stuff.
Yeah.
So you can see a few purple routers, but the stuff I also got rid of over the years on eBay. I've tried Netgear. I've had Linksys. I've had D-Link. I've had a variety of different Motorola and other brands of cable modems and ADSL devices. So I've been through probably a dozen different part numbers over the last 10 years or so, since way back in the ISDN days. And seeking that stable configuration has been a quest for about a decade. And finally, in the last year and a half, I pretty much nailed it with the DOCSIS 3 cable modem in the basement, paying for that on my own. So, Jim, I heard you recently discovered the joys of DOCSIS 3.
It made a huge difference. I was surprised at going from DOCSIS 2 DOCSIS 3. I didn't think it would make that big of a difference, and it was huge.
Yeah, and for me, we're looking to pare down the monthly bills, like many parents are doing, trying to consolidate the various monthly bills and look carefully, make sure I was squeezing every last ounce out of Cox that I could. So it's interesting with Cox. They have a limited upstream. So you can do 15 or 30 or 60 down for whatever you want to pay for. But the upstream is about 5 or 6 for all of those packages. So they just don't really care about pumping out video or, VPNing into your corporation and sending up huge files, which I routinely do in my day job. So that's one issue. But for me, on a personal note, finally working at home after many years on the road, I really needed rock-solid, stable network for my kid, really, who was gaming. And he'd be playing with hundreds of people watching on Friday night. The last thing I'd want was for the cable modem or the router to give it up and reboot in the middle of that. That would be an automatic forfeit of his gaming fun more stress.
They'd call him a laggy, right?
Yep. Well, even worse, you're just bummed. So even if it's just latency, you'd just die. So that coupled with me doing my work upstairs, listening to podcasts like this, making sure I can listen to a live stream or Google+, or even broadcast on occasion like tonight. Well, you know what? My kid's on vacation right now. I think he's gaming right now, right? So I needed to make darn sure that my sliver of the network, my slice, my QoS is what I'm using in my router, I need to make sure that doesn't affect him in any way at all. So his gaming machine is absolute priority over all of the machines in the house, my own included. And, he's a junior in high school. I want to do it right this last time I have with them.
Paul, that's kind of a different approach. We usually try and lock our kids down or give them last priority.
He's 16. He's earned the honor. And
you're a nice dad.
Thanks. But he put up with a lot of years of quite a bit of lockdown. So I'm paying him back with some freedom. And have some fun. So, that's the basics. So, the rationale why, obviously, my day job, it's got to be stable. Voice over IP calls on Ooma, that's got to be stable. I'm on that thing all day long, many, many hours a day on the same headset you see me on now. And then finally, just making sure that this headset, which is 6 gigahertz DECT standard, so it doesn't muck with my Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz. That was important. And then wiring in the laptops and the desktops that matter. My son's gaming machine and my own laptop, a W520 Lenovo high-end laptop with 16 gig of RAM and all that. So that's my config. It's stable. And the combination for me was, I'll hold up the box, this Motorola Extreme cable modem that's now 2 years old. So probably getting harder to buy, but it's called the SB6120.
6120, yeah.
And are you sharing? Oh, you're sharing. What are you sharing out in the stream? Okay, you're sharing out.
Yeah, you are. You've got your full screen at the moment.
My video or my diagram?
You want your diagram up?
Yeah, or I could put it up. Actually, you're doing it. Okay, cool.
Thanks. Got it. Yeah.
So yeah, if we look at the diagram for a second.
It's up.
Look at the stream with you. Cool. Thank you. Bit of lag in the stream, of course.
Just a bit.
Yep. Okay, so on the diagram, what you're seeing here is an article I wrote almost a year ago, I think. Yep. October 31st, 2012. No, not quite a year. This is one of my newer ones. So this is about what do you do during a storm? I've had plenty of them lately. How do you replace your cable modem temporarily with some other device, like a Verizon device or AT&T or whatever else you have around? But the picture at the top right is what we're looking at and talking about at the moment. That's my Wi-Fi router that's a back of a Cisco Linksys E4200 version 1 hardware. That matters, right? Because sometimes they have version 2 and version 3 sold later. So you're looking at the back of a Cisco E4200 on the top. 802.11n, dual band, so it can put out 5 gigahertz at the same time as 2.4 gigahertz. And I'll get into why that was important in my house in a moment. It's about my microwave. But that's my combination. Cable modem in the upper right, a Motorola with a particular firmware. I had to poke around forums and find out what's good there, and basically what Cox has put on there about a year ago has been quite stable. And then finally, the Wi-Fi router with a particular firmware that doesn't mess up or reboot when Apple AirPlay is in use on the Apple TV over in the family room. That was another interesting pickle we got ourselves in last summer, picking up an Apple TV and finding the router would reboot. So even though it was stable for a year before that, we brought home one new device to the network, tried to do AirPlay, and boom, the router would go down hard. So I had to update the firmware, and the release notes from Cisco basically acknowledged there was a problem with AirPlay. So I can't say the road's been perfectly smooth, but basically I've had the hardware on the top of the diagram for almost 2 years, and with one firmware upgrade in the mix, it's been pretty smooth sailing. So Jim, do you have questions about, anybody have questions?
In your diagram there, so basically the Wi-Fi router for you is the kind of the central hub at the house, right? That's the point which everything else comes off of it. So get your cable modem on, it goes down, you're just replacing that. You know, plan B is to replace that with your cell phone that's tethered to your laptop, right? And then the laptop goes into the WAN, right, the internet or the WAN port on your on the wireless router and serves the internet speeds. That can't be real great. I mean, you're pretty limited at that point, right? If you're kicking over to your phone,
I'm actually faster on Verizon LTE than I'm on Cox.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your service speed?
It's an iPhone 5, and LTE shows 4 or 5 bars in my house on my second floor here, so it screams. I usually get 25, 30 megabits down, and I get about 8 to 10 up on LTE, whereas I have maximum of about 5 or 6 up on Cox. So yeah, LTE, I actually do better. A little more latency, 60 milliseconds instead of like 25, 30, but you don't really notice that much. Okay. So yeah, it's pretty interesting, right, how that's flip-flopped
there. Yeah, now you're capped. Is your data plan capped in a way? I mean, when you start doing that, are you fairly judicious about it?
I'm capped both ways, Jim, and so are you. We're both on Cox. So Cox is starting to, they're not enforcing anything, but they're kind of upselling you, trying to move you up to a higher plan where you get more gigabytes per month. Now, in Verizon, of course, yeah, if I have an extended power outage and the families live in here like they were, that surprise freakish October snowstorm that took out power for many days in Connecticut here, we had 7 people living under my roof, and everyone was just using the Wi-Fi. Everyone was seamlessly connected. My voice over IP phone was working because we had borrowed a generator. You know, we kept it all going all through one phone.
With just generators? So you had,
correct,
you had, a
generator going out.
Set up your computers first. That was the priority?
Well, no, just one computer, one phone, and the router and the fridges and the heat pump for the natural gas heat for the house. So those were my priorities. Survival, sure. And food, yep. And a computer, too. And yeah. Good points. So yeah, the speed doesn't, it's not that bad when we have a power outage at this point now that we move forward to LTE. The storm, yeah. I just told you about in October, that was still, I think, 3G days. No, actually, I think I had 4G then, too.
So yeah. You mentioned Cox, and this is a good, maybe a good discussion, Nathaniel. And Nathaniel, did we get you back? Is your audio working yet? You might be muted.
Yeah, I'm using the internal microphone.
Oh, okay.
So that's not going to be ideal, but the Bluetooth bed died.
Oh, man. Did the battery die in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I don't want to get into it. But I got headphones, that's all right. And the internal mic will work when I need to talk.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet, so you'll have to. Google will try and find you.
I'll try to fix the gain.
Yeah, well, it'll boost itself. But so thanks for staying muted for me, because we'll pick up a lot of background noise for me as well from that microphone. But
yeah.
Paul, you had mentioned the caps with Cox Communications. I've talked about this on the show several times, that mm-hmm. they don't cap me, but I have gotten a letter before saying, hey, we've got this tool that you can check your internet usage with, and we just want to let you know, we try and keep you around 200 gig, or I think it was my 200 gig, what I paid for, and you were 400 or something like that last month.
Same and, here. Yep, around yeah. 400 or 500, going past a little bit.
Yeah, which is a lot. It's a lot of data. The kids do a lot of streaming, and it's supposed to be unlimited, but it at least at this point, they have not begun to enforce that. When I bought the current router, that the DOCSIS 3 that's in there, I called in. Actually, when I called to cancel my cable, this is a little advice if you want to get more bandwidth for free. I call and threaten to cancel something from them, and they will almost always throw in, whoa, wait a minute, hey, we want to keep you as a customer. Could you, would you take? So I got 6 months of the next level up. And I think I talked about this before, and even threw a picture out at the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. I'm actually getting, I'm only paying for 5 up, but I get 15 fairly consistently on my connection. So for whatever reason, probably shouldn't even advertise this, because Cox will probably come out and shut it down, but I get it fairly regularly, so it's one of those kinds of things.
When shopping for my modem on Cox, I went for one that the technicians would know, meaning if I was paying for the business level of service at $61.20 from Motorola, was a device they'd be providing me for free. But I wasn't paying for that level of service. I was paying for the lower one, so I just went to the local Best Buy at the time. The price was actually cheaper than Amazon back then. It was $80, and just took care of it, and they installed it and activated it. I think your story was similar.
Yep.
They're not that picky. Nope. But I went with one that was, out there in the forums that Cox supported, and that I knew what firmware people were saying was stable. But your story has a few interesting points there, too. Let's see. Well, support. I was worried about that. I'm paying for a lower tier. I thought they might say something when I'm calling and activating it. And no. They're like, no, DOCSIS 3, you'll get bonded pair. You'll probably double your speed. And what do you know, live in the phone call, my speed was doubled immediately doing speedtest.net and so forth. So, yeah, I kind of regret not buying that thing quicker than I did, or earlier than I did.
Yeah, I think that's the number one advice I'd give. If you're on cable modem and you're still running a DOCSIS 2, the upgrade for me was about 80, and I've got the SB6141, still have the manual on my desk. I shouldn't, but I do. 6141, I mean, instant speed increase for me. And it was amazing how much. I didn't think it would make that much of a difference, but it was a huge difference.
Yeah. And then, Jim, you were also mentioning storm and preparedness, right? So, yeah, occasionally power goes out. Well, naturally, you want this stuff in a battery. So my cable modem is near a very small battery in the basement, and it has no voice lines. It's not one of those with a voice port in it. I kept it simple, as few connections as possible, and that thing has a 75-foot cable running right up through my home all the way up to my second floor, where my Wi-Fi router is situated near my desk here, blanketing the house with decent signal, even on the 5 gigahertz. So keeping that up high makes sense. It obviously does better than in a basement, and that's also on a battery. And you know what? Probably once a month, I'll lose power for 5 seconds, and I'm usually on the phone for work if it's the middle of the day, and it sure is handy to just keep cruising right through that with the computer and the phone call I'm on.
That's a good point. I bought a large APC that's got multiple, I think I get up to 600 watts of juice on that bad boy, and one of the lines goes up. I've actually separated a section in my on the wall in my basement here where all the networking equipment is attached to the wall. You know, I went to the hardware store and I got some of that gray plastic striping that you would use to maybe tie up a pipe with, you know, and you could it's got holes in it every inch or so, and so that makes a really nice, you know, set the network equipment on the wall. Yeah, I just screw it right to the wall, and it makes for a nice visual look as well. But it allowed me to get all that equipment kind of in one place, and then I have it all in one strip, and that strip goes into the UPS. And you're right, Paul, we struggle with that here in our area as well. I get these little 5-second, not even that, 3-second, where the power goes down and comes back up. I probably see one of those a month. And it's just really nice to have all that, your modem and all your switches, and especially your router, have that on UPS. I just recently switched over to PFSense for my router, and that's even more important because that thing takes a few... You know, it takes a few more minutes to get all booted back up if the power goes off. And there's no way my family knows how to monkey with that if that does go down. So I think one piece of advice I would give to someone is make sure your networking, not only are your computers on a UPS backup, but your networking equipment is on a UPS backup as well.
Thank you for reminding me of something as you talked there about family, right? I used to travel a lot. I've been to about 25 of these 50 states. So from 2005 to 2010, I was traveling all over the country. And when I'm not home and the, you know, 9-year-old has homework, he's trying to print to the color printer for the next morning. Well, that was important. I had to be able to remotely talk folks through how to get the internet back or how to get cable or the router back or just a printer. So having things labeled and knowing how to talk people through stuff before the days of FaceTime, you know, with decent cell phones. Kind of had to run my house like a data center, traveling a lot. I really wanted to make sure things were solid because it's really bad if the internet went down for, you know, hours when I'm gone, especially if I'm in the middle of teaching, talking, or working in the day and it dies. There's nothing worse than that, right?
No. So
you're trying to help the family and you're stuck. So, yeah, that focus has always been on reliability. I've played with appliances in the past. I've played with a wide variety of devices, but the primary driver for me was all about the reliability of the firmware of the particular router I've chosen. And boy, have I had mixed stories with that, friends and family, people that are used to rebooting the router 2 or 3 times a week. That would be totally unacceptable in my house.
Right.
Constantly doing huge uploads or big streams where it has to stay up.
Well, and I've talked about this, but the reason I went to PFSense was because I was absolutely overwhelming. You know, I have a DIR 655 D-Link wireless router. And I was running everything through it, and I was absolutely overwhelming it. It was, and there could have been some reconfiguration. I had both switches coming out of their own ports, so it was going. You know, you'd think about the traffic. I might have a lot of traffic going in one switch and having to go across the router to get to the other switch to get to another piece of equipment. And I probably could have laid that out a little bit better, but PFSense took care of all that. So it's at this point, I've got I come off the modem into the router, and then the router feeds the switches. And so Sarah's enjoying a show behind us if you hear the laughter. So that kind of changed things for me. But I think that's one thing you have to be careful of. If you have a large network, you can overwhelm some of this equipment. And I'm pretty sure I was overwhelming my wireless router, and I was just dropping some traffic. Well, Paul, good stuff. I'm going to move on to Nathaniel. Hopefully we can get through this with you, Nathaniel, and hopefully we can hear you okay. I think, can you see your, do I have the right diagram up for you?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
We had some questions in chat. I don't know if we want to take a break to answer those quickly.
Yeah, go ahead. If you want to throw, if you've got those marked and can throw them out.
UPS seems to be a consistent thing that people are using on their network equipment in some computers. From my point, I've got 4 UPSs, so they cover the cable modem, the switches, the Vonage box, you know, those networking pieces, and all the computers that are on all the time that I don't want those power spikes and glitches. So I think
right. That's common.
There's a question in chat about how many people are wiring their house. Are they doing it themselves or contracting? Questions like that. And for me, I have some wiring that was done before I moved in, but not enough. So
right.
I got wire supplement wireless.
Nathaniel, do you run, if you don't have wire in a room, do you just go wireless, or do you try and cable it yourself to get there?
It depends. So I have run a long 50-foot underneath the baseboard or along the baseboard and carpet into a room that didn't have anything, especially if I needed a switch for more than one connection in the room. I punched a hole through a wall.
Okay.
And actually, I took my son's blue plastic marshmallow shooter made of PVC pipe and put that in the hole so that it's clean around the sheetrock. He doesn't have a marshmallow shooter anymore, but it worked for me. And otherwise, I'd use wireless. So.
Okay. And Dennis is talking about MoCA, which is that really thin where it takes...
No, MoCA is when you take a power adapter and you run Ethernet over your coax cable that's in the house already. I haven't tried that. That would be another solution depending on where the cable jacks in the room are.
Yeah, we covered a little bit. I think it was on CES. We covered a little bit of the, I think. I'm trying to remember where we covered that. But because I remember saying, I don't really like, and it's just a block for me of running network stuff on power. To me, it just seems like it would really muddy up that signal, but maybe not. You know,
yeah. I haven't tried the cable. This is MoCA. It's over the coax cable, like for your TV, but different from power lines.
Okay.
And I've heard mixed reviews on both of them. Some reviews say, yeah, it's like 100, 200 megabits. Others say it's terrible. So I haven't had to try to use that yet.
Okay. And I know they make some really thin... You can get a Cat5e that they flattened out too, so it, you know, it starts regular size and then it'll go into a really thin flat cable so that you can run it like across doorways. You know, pull the carpet up, slide that thing in there, put the carpet back down, and cover it. So there's some other ways of getting, you know, maybe around some obstacles without having to redo it. My basement is the only thing that's wired. Upstairs is not. So if we go upstairs, it's wireless. If you're downstairs, you're plugged in. So all the equipment that runs is downstairs for whatever reason. We have very little technology upstairs, and the kids are all down, which is great in the winter because it heats the house from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk, Nathaniel, talk a little bit about your setup.
All right. So I think all of us been a variety of things that I've tried and the stack of cable modems. And I switched to the cable modem a couple years ago buying my own, not so much because of the performance, which was a nice thing, but I was tired of paying the rental fee for their cable modem from Comcast. So I said, okay, well, if I buy a $100 cable modem in X amount of months, I'm going to have it paid for, and it's going to work better anyway. So that was a decision for me, and I've been happy with that ever since. It's been great, and I have the same Motorola surfboard model that I think a lot of us have. And then, like you, I've been using the PFSense router for a year and a half or so, and I went off it for a short time trying out one of the Buffalo all-in-one routers that had DDWRT built in, and I tried that for a month or two, and I just didn't like the performance, and it kept dropping, and the wireless wasn't as good. So I went back, and it has been stable since then using this old Dell tower. It has a WAN port, internal LAN port, and then a switch, and it's been solid.
So you're using this Dell, I mean, what's the processor on this Dell that you have?
I think it's a Pentium 4 with 4 gigs of RAM maybe or 2. It's really low power.
Yeah, and I have not, with my PFSense, it's running right now, so it's kind of hosting everything that's going on. I've got, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 MEPs going out and somewhere between 2 and 4 MEPs coming in. On that, and it's barely at, like, the CPU is maybe at 2%, and the memory is maybe at 4. So
yeah.
That's got an Atom 525 in it and 4 gig of RAM. So it's even an Atom 525 would be an overkill.
Yeah,
for PFSense.
I don't think you need much at all.
Although that Pentium 4 would pull quite a bit of power, even just idling, right?
Yeah, that's my complaint. Yeah, it's a Pentium 4. I'm looking at the dashboard. And the CPU usage is, I can just barely see a red line. I don't like it because of the power drain. So it's pulling a lot more power than I need. And so I've been, in my little bit of spare time, reading about building your own PFSense router. And I think last time I was on, Andrew or someone talked about doing it. And I think what I'm going to look at doing is getting a small mini ITX motherboard with a built-in Atom processor, add a gig of RAM, and compact flash card, and just use that. You know, if I can do it for under $100, it's worth it. So.
Yeah, I bet you could. I think that's very, based on my experience, I bet you could get that done for less than $100 for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to find some time to do. But if this is working, I kind of don't want to jinx it. And
yeah.
I don't throw it away until I know that the replacement is good. Like I did with the Buffalo, I tried that for a while, but I didn't touch the PF Sense because I want to be able to put it right back in.
Yeah, and when I set up my PF Sense, I actually ran it separate. Off the network at first, and I just plugged my PC into it because it seems like whenever I want to take the internet down, the family's trying to do something. It's like there's no time I can take the internet down that somebody's not trying to do something or whatever. And so it was like, so I got it all up and running and then made some quick switchovers and got it done. So it is a little tricky when you're going to put it in. You're going to have to take your service down and kind of and bring it back up on PF Sense, but it's definitely worth. I'm a big believer now. Mike Howard got me using it, and I'm a big believer in PF Sense for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to learn how to use it more. I know there's a lot of features in there that I don't use or don't know how to use. So things I want to learn is how to do better QoS, so I can prioritize either devices like Paul's doing or certain types of traffic. So learning to do that. I just installed a new package this week called VNStat2, which gives a little bit prettier bar graphs of your bandwidth consumption and traffic use than is built into the RRDs.
What's that called again?
It's, if you go into the package area, it's called VNStat2 package.
Okay. I'll have to check that out for sure. I love some of the graphs that you get in real time, but love to bump it up a little bit.
So. Well, it gives you the same data. It's just a cute Excel bar graphs rather than the usual network spike graphs that you see.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Where did I say? Oh, I put OpenDNS on the PF Sense, so I run that in my household and block dubious sites, which is great. And I've gotten caught clicking on a link in email that I shouldn't have, and OpenDNS tells me, no, you don't want to go to that site.
Yeah, that's been, I used, when I had all the kids home, I used to use OpenDNS all the time, and it was great. It would kind of protect them all. As the older boys moved away, I kind of got away from OpenDNS, and then recently when I put PF Sense in, I thought, oh, here's a great opportunity. So for folks who don't know, OpenDNS is a DNS service you would point your router towards, and instead of your traffic going back to your ISP to be served up, it's going to go to OpenDNS's servers, and they do things like they check for some spam protection. It's a phishing scams. It can block sites that you might not want for whatever reason. It's got a lot of flexibility, and it's all manageable over the web. So it's a really nice service. If you just go to opendns.com or .org, maybe both of those get you there. The other thing they claim is that you get a speed increase. Their DNS servers are supposed to be optimized and cached for speed. So you even get a little bit faster service if you go through them. So great service, especially if you have kids. It's a really good, and you're worried about what they're seeing on the web. It's a good good thing to go with.
Well, and I like it at the router level rather than on. I don't have to mess with a single computer. I put it on the router, and I know the whole network's covered. So if someone brings their own device in, it's still going to get blocked. And obviously, as the kids get older, they'll find ways around it. But
right now,
they don't.
Yeah.
I do set categories to block, like phishing and porn and things like that. But I also pay a little bit for the account that gives you your history over time rather than the last month or something that's free. So I got 12 months of statistics data from the network.
How much does that cost?
I don't remember. Really, it wasn't that much. It's a good question. Somebody might know.
It can't be too much.
It's got to be like $12 or maybe $20 for the year or something.
So your PF Sense router is serving up all that. You've got OpenDNS set on that.
Yep.
You're coming out of that into what?
So from that, I have a gigabit switch, just a Netgear GS, and then that runs to the Vonage voice over IP adapter, the HD Home Run, and maybe a wireless access point there in the closet. And So in this closet where the electrical panel is, it's behind me here. I did the same thing as you, where I mounted plywood on the wall and I screwed all the devices out of the plywood. And I'm sure it's not elegant, and a professional installer would cringe, but it's up off the floor.
Right.
And we were in Arizona over break, and then I came back, and the water connector to my refrigerator was leaking just a tiny bit, so that it was cooling on the floor and then down through the floor into that closet, the electrical closet. So it shorted out the UPS battery that was on the floor, which killed all the devices, including the PFSense router and the modem. But fortunately, since they were all up off the floor, the battery, the UPS shorted, and nothing else was really damaged. So I had to replace that, but it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it is good to get that stuff up on a shelf or, you know, somewhere, especially in the basement. Get that up, because you never know. And I like that. Again, I like that. I like just screwing them right to the wall. It makes for a nice presentation that way.
Yeah. And also, I labeled it, like Paul was saying, I have to do phone support for my family if there's power or something. So there's a clear label that says, you know, this is the wireless router. This is the Vonage adapter.
That is a great idea.
And on the Dell Tower, I have a little long strip pointing at where the power light shows, and this should be green, you know. So.
That's a great idea, because you're right. I mean, Paul was talking about this earlier. You know, you're your family tech support, and they're going to call you at home, or they're going to call you at work, or it's going to be the least convenient time with those questions when things don't work.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
So one other point, or one of the things I wanted to bring up that people mentioned is this new unplug-and-play WAN side vulnerability, and where your router is open to unplug-and-play configuration from the outside, not from the inside. So on the inside, it's set on your home network so that it enables Xboxes and other devices to open ports it needs to get in and out, and it's not supposed to be outside. It's been discovered that a lot of routers at home are vulnerable outside, and the PFSense is not. So it's a quick, easy test to know.
That's good to know. Because I have turned Universal Plug and Play off on PFSense, just because I don't really have any devices that work with it. But it's good to know that is not vulnerable to that as well.
Yeah, and turning it off helps, but the problem was that even if you turned it off, it was sometimes still enabled on the outside, and so that's why you have to check to see if your brand of router is susceptible. And Paul posted a. Tinker Guy put in the notes or a link in the show notes where you can look for an explanation and test it on grc.com or other places.
Oh, good. Good. So good for us. Paul, make sure that makes its way into the show notes if you could.
Sure, Jim. And just there in the chat, tinkertry.com/network. All the articles, including QoS tuning and universal plug and play worries, are right there.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing those because that's good stuff for me to learn and keep working on.
Yeah, it was just an hour before going live, I was building my Windows Home Server 2012 Essentials box, and there it is. For remote access, they talk about, go ahead and enable a universal plug-and-play, and I've had that off for years. So it's working around it is not a big deal. You just got to forward port 443 and port 4125 for Windows Home Server to your fixed IP address on your home LAN. That's it. For people that are used to port forwarding, that's not that big a deal.
No.
It's really if they have two Xboxes in one house that they're really in, it gets tough. If you have just one Xbox, it's not that big a deal either to just disable Universal Plug and Play entirely.
Yep, only got one, so.
There you go.
I only use it for media, so I don't be care if it games. So questions I had for the group, both in chat and tonight, was because of the way my house is wired, I have switch into switch into switch. At one point, I have 1, 2, 3 switches before it gets to a desktop computer. And is that going to degrade the quality of my wired network at all because it's going through 3 gigabit switches? And after that, how can I test my bandwidth internally, my wired bandwidth, using a tool like iPerf or something to see what kind of throughput am I getting between network devices on my network? But I don't expect the answer, but it's the kind of things I'm trying to learn about.
Paul, you might, or John, I'll throw that out to either one of you guys. I don't know.
Well, if you check that PDF that I had posted in the show notes, it was a PDF to it was a file that I have in my Dropbox file that I was sharing with you guys. It's not really clean enough, I think, for prime time, but it had a lot of testing that I did on my own home network, and I just used a test device called Land Speed. And you can take a look at it, and it shows all the tests that I did. And I can talk a little bit more about it later. But it's a good way to get a feel for, you know, if there's bottlenecks in your system. And I used it along with, you know, you can get 100 feet of network cable. I went and got 100 feet of Cat 6. And would use that to, like, jump around switches, and then I would do a land speed test with that, and then I would go ahead and then go back and then do another land speed test going through the switch, and then I could compare, you know, if it was a direct cable link and or whether or not going through the switch and see, you know, what kind of difference it made. And in some cases it made a difference, in some cases it didn't. And and it's free.
You know, so, John, walk me through that real quick. If I wanted to use this software, do I? And I'm checking maybe a cable between two. You know, I've got some cable that comes out of a switch. It goes through a box. It then goes up over the through the wall and over to the next room and down, and it goes through a switch out to my kid's PC. If I want to check the connection between the switch and his PC to see what his throughput is that what I would use this for? And how would I use it?
Well, yeah, you check it between from one PC to another.
Okay.
You know, by how you wire up your test setup. And I wish I'd been able to spend more time, but I had about a 12-page thing that I stuck in there. But I would like say when I tested at the time when I had a Dell PC as my desktop, and I wanted to test my carrier. It's Powerline Carrier or the Powerline Ethernet. It was a D-Link DHP302, actually two of them, going over the electrical line. I wanted to see what kind of throughput I was getting with that. I went from the Dell, plugged into one of the DHP302s, and then did a test from the Dell, which went through the DHP302s over the power line. At the time, it went through my my router, and then from the router, it went to my EX487. That's what I was using as my my target, really. And then I could compare that test to running the direct cable from my Dell directly to the my router, and also you know, doing some other tests. But I could compare what kind of results, you know, I was getting. Or I also compared it to, I had a bridge access point set up, actually a couple of bridges, so I would test each of those, and like the Powerline Carrier system with the 302, comparing that to using the bridge access point. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out, but I do have it in the show notes that people can look at these different devices. But the bridge access point system, so basically it's using like an in speed connection, like where you want to pass it through a wall or something by a radio wave. And I was getting like about a five time difference in performance between the Powerline Carrier and using a bridge access point. And then
five
if
times
I jump
better?
To... Pardon?
Five times better to use the power than the
No,
cable?
To use the bridge access point.
Okay, all right.
And then going to direct cable, then you multiply that by about five or six.
Okay.
So, and it was after doing a whole bunch of tests in late 2009, 2010, that convinced me that I needed to do some just straight wiring. And after also doing some testing, I found out that it was better to go with switches than using the back of the router as a even though they say they're gigabit switches, it was better to use a real gigabit switch and rather than trying to do it through the router. It was about a performance difference of about 1 to 2.
So what you're saying is if you're buying a wireless router per se, and you're using that as a wireless router and all your network traffic is going through that, you're better off having a dedicated switch for those to go through as opposed to trying to use that router as also a switch, right?
Well, you're better off, yes, performance-wise, but like I said, it's like a 1 to 2 difference. And for most people in their home, it probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference. I was looking for increased performance at the time because things were being backed up to my home server, and I wanted it to have as much bandwidth for the backups because I could see a difference, on the bandwidth on backups. But if you're not doing that, I mean, really, if you're just looking at regular videos, even something from a DVD type quality, the 302 is plenty fast enough. But the 302, that thing was just running at roughly about 10 or 11 megabits reads and writes.
Okay.
So.
Well, John, take a second. I've got your diagram up.
I didn't mean to step all over.
No.
I'm good. John, I'm really enjoying listening to it. And I just want to try to summarize what you were saying is you're segmenting out the pieces and taking advantage of a tool and using it for what it's built for. So wired gigabit is built for bandwidth. And when you can use that, you're connecting the heavy network devices with wired as much as possible. And that's kind of no-brainer. And then you said you were using your access points as bridges rather than DHCP and all that stuff. So they're just capitalizing on that functionality. And then in my case, the pfSense router is really the heart of the routing on the network and the DHCP and DNS, those kind of functionalities. So you're separating all these functions out into pieces that do that piece of the whole job better rather than relying on a single device to do everything.
Right. And it's something that's evolved over quite a few years. I mean, when I started out, it was just with a D-Link DI-524 as my router, and I had everything plugged into that, and everything plugged in the basement, everything upstairs, everything else was Wi-Fi. And it was just after, you'd start getting the pieces and expanding and find things that worked and things that didn't work and give the equipment away that didn't work to somebody else.
Yeah, right.
Or other family members.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's great. And so the LAN speed tool test, is that the one you use or is that mentioned by someone else?
Yeah, LAN speed test.
And is that the one at totusoft.com? I posted that in the chat. I wasn't sure if that's the tool you're referring to.
I don't know. I would have to look it up. I had it in that PDF file that I had linked into that for you guys to look at. I had not all the tests. I had maybe 5 of the tests. I did like 15 or 20 tests at the time, but I thought those were the most illustrative. And then I summarized those tests in the show notes where I had the net effects of testing. It's near the end of my show notes where power line carrier was the slowest, though it's still fast enough for most videos. Direct Cat 6 cable was the fastest. I mean, that's the way to go if you can. Gigabit switches were faster than plugging into the back of the router. And the back panel of access points or bridges, I'm talking about the 1522 now, could also be used as gigabit switches because when I tested those, those were just as fast as the D-Link gigabit switches. But then the 1522 is also a D-Link device. Once I got started on D-Link, it was just, that's the way I've been going.
It was all downhill from there, right?
Yeah, and I got that first D-Link router, the DI-524. The only reason I got that was I went to Best Buy, and it was the cheapest one they had. And I really liked it. I mean, it was just started up, and and start it up and forget it. And that's what I liked. And I just started getting more and more D-Link stuff, and it just I've had really good luck with D-Link. So I guess you want to go to my diagram now?
Yeah, let's walk through that diagram. Is what you're referring to. So you're coming in on your cable modem. It's the same one we all have, right? Basically, it's that 6121.
Right. Yeah, and I just upgraded to that.
And that's a DOCSIS 3 as well, right?
Right. Right.
And then is the router you're just talking about, is it that the DGL4500 there? That's
the one I got in 2009 when I retired the 524. I went with the DGL4500, which is overkill really for a router, but it was on sale, and so I'm a sucker for sales. And then I thought, I wanted something that could do anything that I wanted it to do in the future. And I was thinking about trying to get more into gaming, and I have a little bit, but never to the point where I really needed a gaming specific router. And this router is designed so that you can take it and you can segregate your system so that the gamers get the priority over everybody else. And you can...
It's got different colored ports on the back of that. Is that the one?
Well, you can really, you get into the software and you can really fine-tune it.
But it's not that one that has plug your gaming ones in here, it's not that. Okay, all right.
No, you can select it. But it's like the other D-Link router I had. It was basically plug it and forget it. The only time it's been down is when I took it down because I have it on a UPS. And I have all my switches on UPSs except for the family room. I don't have the big screen TV or the HTPC or the switch there on a UPS, but everything else is on UPS. So I have four UPSs in my system scattered around. But anyway, I don't know if you have the diagram up.
I do.
Okay.
I do. Yep.
After the cable modem and you go into the router, and then from there, like I said before, with my first router, I was just coming off the back of it. And then I went to a D-Link 8-port switch, a DGS2208. Well, as I kind of outgrew that, well, then I got a 2205 and just kind of daisy-chained them together. And then I kind of outgrew that, and I was seeing, though, when I was testing, I could see some performance degradation because it was daisy chain those two, plus then it was going up, and I had the hardwire to a switch in my family room that then broke everything off. You can see that's a DGS2205, and then my home office had a 2208. So I was seeing some performance degradation with the daisy chain in the basement, so I went with a DGS 1024D, and that thing is just, I saw a performance boost, a big performance boost going to that thing, taking out the daisy chain, and I think my guess, I don't know for sure, but the DGS 1024D just seemed to have some real speed to it. So
is there any intelligence in that, John, or is it just a straight switch?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I've turned it on and I just plug into it and the thing just performs.
Okay.
And I fiddle with computers a lot, but the switches and the routers and stuff, I just want to plug it in and turn it on.
Yeah. So at this point, you've got that big 24-port gigabit switch, you've got your four servers attached to it, and then two more, your 8 ports coming off of it, and your 5 ports coming off of it.
Right.
Does that really mean you've got, so that's four, that's 6 ports. Does that really mean you have 18 ports open on that thing?
No, I got a lot more cables going to the servers.
Okay.
Most of the servers have at least 2 NICs in them. And then I have like test setups, like when I'm tearing something apart and I got cables running over to that test, like the test bench, that I can just plug right into it. So I don't have to be moving things around and stuff. So it's I would have to go down and look, but there's Probably.
Why not attach your HD Home Run right to the 24 port switch and have that downstairs with the rest of the networking equipment?
Well, I did it upstairs because I had an available coax output.
Oh, gotcha.
And so it was just easier to do it upstairs. I mean, downstairs I would have to make a coax output available. And though eventually in the future, and I think I put something in there in my future upgrade plans, was to kind of do like what you did, take another HD Home Run and attach that to an antenna and then tie that into my system. And there's a place in the basement, there's kind of a run through the walls up to the attic. It's about the only one I have, the only easy one I have. So I'll put the other HD Home Run downstairs. One thing that I'll mention, the coax that came in, that goes into my cable modem, that's coming from a grounding block. So there's a ground on my system before it gets to my cable modem and everything. So to protect my system. And the only reason I mention that is I have a friend that had a friend at work that has had a satellite system. And he didn't have a ground on his coax coming from the dish antenna, and it got hit by lightning, and it just wiped out everything. Anything electronic in his house was taken out, and he had a really, really nice home theater system, you know, with the seats that vibrate and all this other stuff, and the room decorated and everything with theater seats and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, that was. I even cried when I heard about it.
That's a good point. So the cable for me comes in on the outside. We have a big cable box that sits on the outside of the house, and then there's a couple that come in the house from there. And they, right there at that connection, they've got a copper cable that comes off that bar. There's a little bar that serves that there, and then goes down along the house and down to a grounding rod that we've driven, 9 feet into the ground or whatever it is. Down there, very, very important. That actually feeds a couple different things, right? The main power, the main power as it comes into the house. There's also a grounding, grounding cable that comes out of there. So, yeah, you might, if you have an older home, you might want to, anything built before 1960, you might just go out and take a peek and make sure that some of those, even your phone line, should have some kind of ground that comes off.
Anything electronic or electrical going into your house should have a ground on it. And then actually, per code, all those grounds should be bound together so that they're all at the same grounding potential. Because you wouldn't want your electrical, your AC system, to have a ground that might float from the ground that's for your cable system or your phone system or something.
Yeah, electricity always follows the path of least resistance, and so you want them all following the path of least resistance into the
ground. And you want that path outside the house.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, they come into. We have a little bar too that those come into, and then that one cable goes down into the ground. So it's kind of a nice setup.
And kind of going back to my show notes, I had put in some references. And, I had mentioned that the thing that I liked about the DGL-4500 was I just basically plugged it in, set the thing up, and I've forgotten it. Whenever I do anything with it, I have to pull out a book, and you can imagine what kind of book I have. It's a three-ring binder. You saw my books at the meetup with all the tabs and everything, and Paul took a picture of one. So, I had to pull out a book and go through what I've done to it before I make more changes to it, because it's I don't have to keep going to it that often, so I forget a lot of things. But even despite that, even though I like it that you can plug it in and forget it, there's a lot of things that have come up that I think was important as far as how to protect your home network. And I put some links in about that. And one of the big ones I thought was Michael Martis had talked about on a BYOB episode 77, and it was a Wi-Fi protected setup or a WPS pin brute force vulnerability. You remember he talked about it, and he gave us some links, or they gave us some links in that episode show notes. And about as soon as I heard that, you know, I did exactly what Michael told me to do. I went out and got the show notes and figured out how to turn that off on my router, and I went and did it. And but there's other things that you can do to improve the security of your router and your home networks. And so I did put links to that in the show notes, so I hope those make it. And there were some references I put in, because I know there were, I saw on the chat, there were a few people talking about, you know, that they're still new to a lot of this stuff. And there's some good references that are out there that JPL Tim had written, and PC Doc, I think, had done, and what is it, USA Comp, or what did you say his name was?
It was AJ. Yeah, and actually, I just threw that link out in chat at thehomeservershow.com. It's kind of an intro to networking, and AJ did a really nice job of kind of giving you the basics of this is what this means. And so, Jackie, if you're out there listening and you're wondering what we're talking about, head out to that link. You know, Jackie hangs around because she's trying to learn a lot of stuff about computers. And so head out there, take a look at that. Some really, a really good basic introduction to home networking.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention there's that stuff in there that I had dug up. I thought maybe somebody getting started or just wanting a refresher, that would be good.
It's a good link. John, real quick, let me interrupt you for one sec. I do need to get a Drobo word of the show out for folks that are listening.
All right.
We've had such a good conversation. I hate to break in, but let me just say our friends over at Drobo have decided to help us give away another Drobo FS. So if you're wondering what that is, it's really a network-attached storage device. It has up to 5 drives that you can put in it, up to 4 terabytes per drive, so a total of up to 20 terabytes, although the volume it will create is 16, but up to 16 terabytes of data, and that's a lot of data, guys. I mean, in a network-attached storage, pretty nice unit, retails for about $500, and Drobo has given it to us to give away. A couple ways to win this thing. One is to go out to the Facebook page for The Average Guy, not the group, but the Facebook page, and I'll throw that link in the show notes as well in case you need that, but you can find it on Facebook. I think it's just facebook.com/theaverageguy. And if you go out there, I have a post that you can share. If you share that, you're automatically put in for the drawing. You need to come over to, though there's a post that you share it on, you need to make a note of that in our raffle drawing. So there's all the instructions are out at theaverageguy.tv/giveaway. I seem to be bumbling through it. So just head out to theaverageguy.tv/giveaway. That has that. The other thing you need to know is the word of the show or word of the day. And I hadn't made one up, so I'm going to make this one up. It's on my speakers here. It's Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D. Put the word Roland in that when you head out there to the giveaway, when you do the giveaway site, it will ask you, what was the word of the show? It is Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D. Those are my speakers. And put that in, and you will get entered for a chance to win the Drobo. None of you guys had Drobos in any of your diagrams. I'm disappointed.
I left it out. It's my fault. I know I have the big Drobo crash plan supporter there. I didn't network that all out. I tried to keep it a little simpler in my case. But
no,
I've still got the original Gen 2 4 bay going strong.
Good. Good. Well, R-O-L-A-N-D to win a D-R-O-B-O, and that is the word of the day. All right, John, let's come back to you. Any other things you want to round out your segment with? You had a lot of great links we're going to put in the show notes. Head over to theaverageguy.tv. Actually, a new thing that I started is I'm using kind of a link generator for the show now. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv/HT106, that will get you to the show notes for this show. I haven't made it yet, so if you're listening live, don't go over there. They're not there yet. But if you're listening to the recorded, theaverageguy.tv/HT106. John, anything to follow up on?
You have my diagram up there, but the network printer that I have indicated, that's really a wireless, combination wireless wired printer, and it's become really handy. It's they're all pretty common anymore. But I went with an OfficeJet 6000 just I wanted something that was just strictly a printer, because I already had a scanner and I already had another printer dedicated to printing out photos and everything. So I just wanted something strictly for printing, but it works well. And it's something I would recommend. Those things are easy to set up. I also I know Mike was out there in the chat, so cover your ears, Mike. But I have various wireless iOS devices that work well with my system. One thing that I have is I used it a lot initially, but not much anymore. But I still have it. It's a Wi-Fi radio. It's called an Irma MyLine, and it's an IR001. It was kind of cool at first. We got it so that we could tie it into my 30-year-old stereo system and listen to internet radio over my ancient 1980s vintage stereo. With my HTPC now and stuff, you know, we don't listen to it as much anymore. And as you noted too, I think on my diagram, I have a number of servers that I play with in the basement, I don't know what else to say about that. But I think that somebody looking at a network, you know, you just start out with the basics and you add things as you need it, or as you see you need it. But definitely running cable is the fastest way to go as far as transfer speeds. It's difficult to do it and have it look right, and that's one of the things that had slowed me down. But when I went from the basement and I went to the family room and also to my home office, I went up and I measured probably a half dozen times so that I could come up in the wall from the basement or from our crawl space, because we have both. And then I would punch a hole in the wall, and there's adapters that you can get at Home Depot or Lowe's, boxes, they're called upgrade type boxes. You put those in, and then at Fry's, I found some good deals on some Cat 6 wall plates and Cat 6 switches, so that would fit into the wall plates. And so then I would just run the cable up in the hole, put the box in, put the wall plate in, and I could basically just plug the cable into the back of the device on the wall plate, screw it in, and it looked like it was just built in. I think that's the real Big Ten way to go. But you know,
did you just say the real Big Ten way to go?
Definitely, yes.
Nicely done.
Is there anything else? Is there any other way to do it?
Way to throw in a Big Ten reference in there. I like that. Let me throw this out to you guys. I know this has come up in chat. Cat 5e versus Cat 6. Does it really matter either way? A bunch of my cabling is Cat 5e that I'm using as, you know, between gigabit switches and stuff. Do I need to switch all that out to Cat 6?
If you're asking me, I wouldn't.
Okay, so John says Cat 5e and Cat 6.
But all the new stuff I put in would be Cat 6.
Okay, Nathaniel?
Because the prices are basically the same. I mean, if you're running new or buying new, it's not much of a price difference just to put in Cat 6. And no, at this time, we're not going to probably see any benefit in our home networks from running Cat 6 versus 5 because the runs are short. And I think interference is one of the things that's been mentioned. It's increased. But
if I'm... If I've got a Cat 5e cable, and you know I'm jumpering, maybe I'm going between my 1 gigabit switch and another gigabit switch, and all I got is Cat 5e, am I okay, or do I need to go buy a Cat 6 cable?
I would go buy a new one.
Now you're fine.
Okay.
And Jim, I've done some testing. You get past 50 feet with Cat 5, you're in trouble for gigabit for sure. You want to go to Cat 5e or Cat 6.
So there's some length issues.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So 50 if you got some old 5 around, you want to get rid of it if you're doing anything with gigabyte at any length. Reality is you don't necessarily see a difference at those short lengths.
So when I was testing my switches and everything, I was using 100 feet of Cat 6.
Decent quantity, that's a pretty good run.
And But I think for most practical purposes, if you already have 5e in place, I wouldn't yeah. mess with it. But if I'm getting new, I would go ahead and get 6.
Okay.
Agreed.
That's good advice. I think so. And then let me just make sure I understand. Cat 5e good to about 50 feet. And then
you say Cat 5 is 50 feet. 5e you can go 150.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So Cat 5 is, and I've been going through as I've been switching over from 10/100 to gigabit over the last 2 years. I've been going through kind of just throwing out my 5 cables that are there and just tossing them. So that's pretty for almost everybody. If you look on the cable, if you're wondering, oh, how do I know if it's Cat 5e or Cat 6 or Cat 5? With most cables, there's a little writing on the cable itself, little printing on the outside of the casing, and it'll say right on there Cat 5e or Cat 6. And if it doesn't, it's probably Cat 5, and you need to toss it. Would that be a safe assumption?
I wouldn't toss it.
You don't toss anything, John.
Well, no, the Cat 5, you can still use it. Especially if it's short pieces, and if I'm just hooking something up, like my printer. Well, I don't care.
Sure.
I don't think I have any 5 anymore because I've pretty well gone through it. But
good point. The printer's 10/100, right? So yeah. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Good point.
And
I'm gonna totally disagree. You guys are crazy. I would throw out everything this short and small and Cat 5. I would only use Cat 6 because I'm just crazy like that. $4 at monoprice for 25 feet of Cat 6.
Yeah.
$3.30 is a dollar more for Cat 6 over 5e.
Well, Nathaniel, I'm just thinking if it's Saturday afternoon and you're in a pinch.
Oh yeah, I totally would.
Yeah,
okay. I'm just teasing. I'm just trying to start a fight.
I think I have 2 pieces of Cat 5 cable, and I think one is still in the original packaging that it came with. So I haven't touched it.
Nathaniel, if you have another machine, you can do file copies. You don't necessarily need to use software if you have 2 machines, particularly if they both have solid-state drives or something quick. You can just do a drag and drop of a network share. That's what I tend to do. I'll walk around with a new laptop, see how the Wi-Fi works by just dragging a giant 4.7 gig ISO file.
Yeah.
And just watch it as you move around the house. And that's just something to think about. And boy, 2.4 gigahertz versus 5 can make a huge difference when a microwave is running, I found. So I've wrote an article about that too.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that, because I've had bad luck with 5 gigahertz where my wireless just on the laptop drops off, or on my iPad, on my phone, where the 5 gigahertz just disconnects, and I find the 2.4 to be more reliable.
Sure. No, let's get into that. So just to give an idea of vintage, when we talk about, here, I'll hold up my router, so this old thing, WRT54GS, that's 12 years old now, with Tomato and OpenWRT firmware that people used to use, right? Ancient stuff. And, of course, you're only 2.4 gigahertz right there on the top label. And then that's about the same vintage as the one that John Stutzman was talking about. John, I looked you up at Amazon. It looks like the
524?
Yeah. Hang on. You said a DGL4500. D-Link is what you're using, right?
Right.
About the same vintage, about 2001, 2002. Then there's the DIR655, super popular. That vintage is, I had that for about 4 years in several family members' house on my own. Until I went to a firmware, it wouldn't let me back level. And the new firmware was unstable, and I was like, okay, I want to shop around. But that thing's ancient now. That was like August of 2003. And then it also never did dual band. So flash forwarded to 2 years, a year and a half ago, and that's when I got the Cisco Linksys E4200. Finally, I could do 5 gigahertz and 2.4. In my house, I'm lucky enough that it works. It doesn't have external antennas, which is not ideal, but I'm centrally located on the second floor. It's decent coverage to the house. I realize a lot of people don't have that on 5 gigahertz. But it also lets me use devices while the microwave is running. My microwave seems to be maybe a little on the leaky side. I borrowed another one, and it only affected the speed about half as much. So this sounds like nitpicking, but boy, we got a new Lenovo Yoga 13 under the Christmas tree. It doesn't do 5 gigahertz. It only does 2.4 gigahertz. And boy, when someone's cooking in the kitchen, that thing can barely surf the web up in a bedroom where someone's trying to do homework. So
and 2.4,
these are real problems.
2.4 is the bandwidth in which the microwave operates?
big time. Whereas if I move over to 5 gigahertz, like in an iPhone 5 where you get the 5 gigahertz band, no issue, no degradation whatsoever when the microwave is running.
I did not know that.
Well, my house seems to be particularly bad. So with this, my microwave, which is only 4 years old and not that dirty or anything. So it's got me, you know, thinking, So Nathaniel, your story is 5 gigahertz, just miserable. Not good in your house, doesn't make it through the walls. Right?
I wouldn't say miserable, but I've noticed when my laptop can connect to either one. So I have a dual band Linksys router, the access point that does 5 and 2 at the same time, like you're talking about.
So recent, yeah. What model?
Yeah, so it's E2500, I think.
Yeah, let me look that up again. Okay,
it's in my notes.
Yep.
Let's check. But so I set that up with both bands. So I had the choice, and then the SSID is different between the two. So I have a network 2 for my 2.4 and network 5, so I know which one I'm connecting to. And my anecdotal evidence is when I'm connected with my laptop 5, it'll just drop more frequently than on the 2.4. So I tend to stay on the 2 because it drops less frequently, but I haven't done bandwidth testing or performance testing like you suggested. And maybe your suggestion of taking a large file, copying it onto another network share over wireless and watching what happens when I run popcorn in the microwave. Good anecdotal way to kind of check that out.
Yeah, I didn't try that out. I didn't see a performance difference between 2.4 and 5. When in an earlier setup, before I ran the hard cable to the family room, I had a DAP 1522 below the family room, and then I had another DAP 1522 above in the family room acting as an access point and bridge. And I tried it at 2.4 running at end speed, and then also at 5 and running at end speed. And I got roughly the same throughput. I mean, it was pretty much the same for all intents and purposes. But I wasn't running the microwave at the time. I didn't think to try something like that. So
yeah, even microwave aside, it doesn't penetrate walls as well. So if I get all the way to the basement in a far corner of the house, the 5 gigahertz does fall off a little quicker. But 90% of the rest of the house, its performance is almost double the speed of 2.4 with my particular router. That's very particular, right? It's your house, it's your router, it's the antenna orientation. I had the router at a different angle. I turned it 90 degrees. That changed things because the antennas don't tend to be external these days. So you kind of got a fiddle.
See, when I did my test, the bridge and access point were only about 10 feet apart. They were just going through the floor.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, that's probably more of an ideal testing situation.
So you were saying you had one above the floor and one below, so instead of drilling a hole through the floor, you just sent the wireless right through with the floor.
I didn't want to. I was trying to avoid drilling, and cutting and having because when I start doing things, drilling things in the walls, and and of course I want to do it Big Ten, right? And it just takes me that much longer to do it, and so I was trying to avoid that, and. But in the process, I compared the 2.4 to 5 and didn't see a performance difference, but I left it on 5. And then the other access point that I had that set at 2.4 that I had below my home office.
So I've been told, and maybe I think this is accurate, that the 5 gigahertz range, the benefit of the 5 gigahertz is there's less competing devices on that range. That's one. There's not microwaves, baby monitors, home phones, Wi-Fi stuff. The other is that it has a greater spectrum of channels to choose from. So it's not 1 through 11 and 1611 on the 2.4, but you've got hundreds of channels to choose from. The other benefit of 5, I've been told, is it supports a greater density of devices. So at work, you'll want to use more 5 gigahertz in your auditorium because you can have hundreds of devices going through there instead of but the drawback of 5 is less range and spread the distance of your Wi-Fi reaching, which is what Paul mentioned. Some corners of the house don't get any 5.
Yeah, but I think maybe the take home with that is for the average person, say if you're in an apartment or a condo or something where you're surrounded by a lot of other people who have their devices, most of their devices are going to be set on 2.4. So if you have something that could do dual band, 2.4 or 5 or do both, then you're going to be that much better off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of migration will take a long time. And then, of course, we have new standards coming up, AN.
Yeah.
And then there's the ASUS routers. They're seen as the high watermark or benchmark. And that's kind of hoping to hear how people are doing on those. You know, maybe we just need external antennas again at 5 gigahertz, and we're all happy in any size home. I don't know. My router's 2 years old, I acknowledge. I just don't really look forward to replacing it because it's such a pain to do.
Well, you guys have given me a new thing to look for. I really have not paid much attention to the band on wireless components to this point. I mean, I knew they were out there. I haven't done any testing, you know, in my own network, certainly to see if microwaves or, you know, other phones ringing were causing that. But that's pretty interesting. I'm going to have to take a second look. You know, I bought the DIR 655 at a, you know, it was a reconditioned from Newegg for $30. It was a great deal, but it is bottom. I mean, I think you do get what you pay for. I mean, that's the bottom of the barrel wireless router. It's been a while. It's been around a while. So, man, I guess I need to take a second peek at that wireless equipment. I hadn't planned to really talk wireless in as in depth as we have just here in this short period of time, but I've got maybe a little homework to do.
I think I misspoke too. It's 802.11ac, and there it was, Buffalo, showing that off way back at CES 2012. So, you know, early spec, pre-draft, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it takes a while to change standards. But it's taken this long to finally get 5 gigahertz 802.11n in devices.
Yeah.
Never mind phones ever coming out with 802.11ac and so forth. So it really is hard to dump stuff. It takes five years.
Yeah, isn't it the iPhone 5, the first one that supports 5 gigahertz?
I'm having good luck in my house with it, but not everyone has a similar story. But correct.
Yeah,
there's very few devices advertising that. Yeah.
Guys, I unfortunately we got to wrap it up with that from a networking standpoint. I'm sure we could go on most of the night talking about our networking setups, but some great content. And I just want to remind folks that if they want to get some additional information on this, we threw out a lot of numbers and a lot of things. I didn't catch everything myself. We'll try to include all of that stuff over in the show notes. If you head over to theaverageguy.tv. They will be there. Actually, theaverageguy.tv/HT106 when I get that posted, and you can get over there and get the show notes and get that done. Guys, before we go, I want to ask you one question. It was actually a question I got over in the Home Server Show forums. Somebody sent me a direct message, and they had some questions, and it's going to be kind of around networking, but it's more kind of around the server environment, and I thought I probably got the three best guys that I know of at this point, and I'm sure there's others that could do it as well, but three great guys to answer this question. So let me read this question to you. It's from HyperVG in the Home Server Show forums, and he says this. He says, let me get to the right spot. I need some advice on a new network I'm setting up. I have two servers, both running Server 2012 data center with Hyper-V. I'm going to set up a failover for the Hyper-Vs, but I also want to set up a DHCP, domain controller, DNS, Active Directory, but I have heard that you should not install those roles on the data center directly while I'm running Hyper-V. I cannot seem to find a clear answer on this, so I'm coming to you. I used to run SBS 2011, and now I have looked at the big move. He's moving on to 2012 going forward. Any help would be awesome. Okay, does that make any sense to you guys as far as what they're asking there?
Well, for me, I understood most of the words, and individually I can understand what he's talking about, but putting it all together, I'm no good. So
yeah.
I have to pass.
That's fine. Paul, John, does any of that make sense to you as I read it to you?
I'll take a stab at it. So he mentioned moving to, well, does he have a family? Is he living with folks, right? Because if you rely on Hyper-V running for DNS, DHCP, that's an awful lot putting on yourself as your network administrator. Because if those services go down, you've got problems with other people living in the house. So, but that aside, yeah, it would work. I did a Hyper-V lab, an install fest, Microsoft called it, where we sat there on a Saturday a couple months ago and installed Hyper-V, made it a domain controller. It was the DNS and DHCP server. And sure, you know, that stuff's fine and it's solid in Server 2012. It's more a matter of I'm kind of thinking, would you want to, though, in your home rather than a real enterprise?
And you just say that from a support perspective of being the guy that has to administrate it and support it?
Yeah, correct. If you want to mess around with Hyper-V or reboot or whatever, you're taking down your vital network services, all of them, DHCP, DNS, and nobody is going to be surfing in your house while that thing's down. So
yeah,
that's for sure. That's fun. But yeah, I don't. Should be fine. Okay. Yeah, I guess I've done it about 2 months ago.
Right, John. Any input on that?
Well, I'm kind of like with Paul. But my experience with Hyper-V is. I don't want to say I'm playing. I'm still learning about it and doing a lot of things. And to put something up in the Hyper-V, I'm constantly tearing my servers apart and turning them off and rebuilding them. And in fact, before this show, I spent probably about 3 hours messing with my big server that I call Colossus that is running 2012. And for me, it would just be a nightmare because things would be down all the time. The iPads wouldn't work and the iPods wouldn't work and life would be hell for me. So I wouldn't do it, but I think the person that I would ask is Mike Martis. He would be the guy that he's Mr. Hyper-V in a lot of ways, and he's the guy that I've tried to learn a lot from. So I would ask him, but, can it be done? Yeah, sure. The question is, do you want to do it that way?
Yeah, and again, that's Hyper-VG at Home Server Show Forums. I would encourage you to drop that. Just make that a public, because Mike is out there in the Home Server Show Forums. A Canadian Geek also out there in chat right now says, yeah, don't worry about it. He'd be good to go. It's possible to do, and he says he also says pass on to him that he should have the secondary set to the other system.
Yeah,
it's good to hear he has two systems. Then you can keep some uptime going, or migrate the workload from one to another, just like you can with VMware.
Sure.
Keeping uptime up.
Okay. Well, I thought we'd just throw that out. It was a good opportunity. I didn't know. Nathaniel, I'm with you. Just full transparency, he thought I was an expert on that. not even close on that. And I knew we were coming up on a show, and I thought between the three of you, we would probably have an answer. So I threw that out there, and Hyper-VG, there is your answer. And of course, I'll encourage you to throw that out into the live part of the forums, and you won't hurt my feelings. And get some good answers from that as well, hopefully.
Yeah, there's a lot of other Hyper-V people out there that have a lot of professional business experience, and mine's more kind of shade tree type experience.
Ah, very good. Well, I just heard from Andrew Morris, who normally joins us out here on Thursday nights. He things are crazy at his place. Most folks know he has twins. They just had twins about 2 months ago, and that he's going to be hit or miss for the next 6 years in what we do here. But Andrew could not make it in, so we missed him. And a Christian is off tonight as well. We missed him. He's busy. School just keeping him pretty busy as well. He just rebuilt his home network, so we'll get him on here next week to talk about that. Speaking of next week, we'll do the same topic again. So if you're listening to the recorded version of this, come back on Thursday night. Join us live. Great chat. I want to thank everybody who came out tonight to be in chat. Very lively conversation. Some of the best information that, no offense to you guys, but some really good information goes on in chat as well as when we're getting this. And just head out next Thursday night. That's the 28th of February, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv. And we will do that. Watch my Twitter. Feel like something's going on next Thursday. I might be a few minutes late, but just make sure you head over there, and we'll do this next week as well. Guys, I appreciate you coming out. Great job on the show notes. They are going to make a dynamite material over there, and again, you can head out to theaverageguy.tv/HT106. 107 is next week. Actually, Daniel J. Lewis is up the first Thursday in March. If you don't know who Daniel is, he is he's a podcast, another one of those guys like Ray Ortega and Dave Jackson. I've been kind of tracking down these podcasters who do podcast consulting and podcasts about podcasts. And if you were ever thinking about starting a podcast and you wanted some advice or want to know what we do here in the podcasting world, these are the guys. And Daniel will actually be on the show that Thursday night, so you might want to come out and join us for that as well. Just give you a heads up as well. Also let you know that if you are new to podcasting and you're considering an easier way to listen to the show each week, you don't have to go out to the site and have to push play on the post. You should try Stitcher. Stitcher is available on both Android and iPhone platforms. It's a great way to listen to your podcast both at home and on the road. It is audio only, but of course this show and all the past shows are available on Stitcher. Stitcher.com, search Home Tech. It's education for your ears. And you can also view and subscribe to the show on YouTube. That's just youtube.com/theaverageguy. Or catch the show each week live, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv/live. Don't forget, we have groups both on Facebook. That's real easy. Facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy. That's not easy. It'll be in the show notes if you need to get to it. And just at Google Plus, just search The Average Guy Podcast. And don't forget, use The Average Guy's .tv/Amazon. Some of you have been doing that. I appreciate you doing that. We take all those dollars that we make off that little commission and we recycle those back into giveaways. So theaverageguy.tv/Amazon helps us out from a giveaway standpoint. One more time, the Drobo giveaway, it will end the first day of March, or I think maybe March 4th. We'll be giving that away. Two more shows. Today's word of the show is Roland. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/giveaway. And get registered for that and put that word Roland in the sign up, and you will be eligible to win a Drobo FS. Paul Brerin, Nathaniel Linnelly, and John Stutzman, all your contact information will be in the show notes if they want to get a hold of you. Thank you guys for coming out tonight. Most excellent. The guys from 107, if you're listening, you are now on official warning. You got to step up your game. These guys came ready tonight. Had some good stuff ready to go, and next week we'll cover the same thing. So we'll do it all here next Thursday next week. Thanks for coming out tonight. Good night.
Thank you, Jim.
Good night.
Good night.